Life is short, have an affair. That's the tagline of controversial dating online dating service Ashley Madison. Now, I'm not sure if any of you have ever heard of Ashley Madison. Now, online dating services, of course, aren't new, and there are thousands of them. But Ashley Madison is controversial because it's an online dating service which is primarily targeted to people who are already in a relationship. Now, I noticed an ad for this group on my phone late one night, and their slogan's memorable. Life is short, have an affair. And it seems as if there are many who agree with them now, as Ashley Madison now claims to have over 9.3 million members worldwide. And Ashley Madison are not the only ones offering these illicit services. A quick internet research reveals such sites as BeNaughty.com, which gives affairs and saucy fun for married flirts, or LonelyHousewives.com for those who are seeking fun. Then there's MarriedButPlaying.com, AussieAffair.com, and the list goes on and on. It's never been so easy to have an affair. And why not? Affairs could actually be good for you. I've heard of one woman who claimed that her extramarital sex helped her sleep better. And who knows, maybe even an affair might save your marriage. Indeed, Ashley Madison claims to save more marriages than they cause to break up. They observe that many people who live in sexless, emotionally distant relationships, marriages, but they don't want to leave their partners. But with the services of Ashley Madison, they can seek carnal comfort in others, and it's cheaper than obtaining a divorce. Now, Ashley Madison claimed that they don't encourage anyone to stray. They say their clients stray because they're missing something in their relationship and they feel they need or deserve more than their primary partner offers. So affairs can save marriages where emotional and sexual needs are not being met. So why not engage in a passionate real-life drama? Why not have an affair? Ashley Madison go on to claim that monogamy is a failed experiment. It's just monotonous to remain monogamous. And some client scientists support this by claiming that cheating is natural. They claim that humans are instinctively adulterous. Scientist David P. Barash argues that monogamy goes against some of the deep-seated inclinations with which biology has endowed most creatures, including humans. They argue that in nature, very few animals practice monogamy. The reason? The search for better genes. The great tennis player Boris Becker once said, somewhat philosophically, "Sex is totally overvalued in our society. I was totally monogamous during my 7-year marriage. But I also think that men are not created to be monogamous for our whole lives." He said this after it was revealed he had a sexual liaison with a waitress in a broom cupboard when his wife was in hospital giving birth. We're not meant to be monogamous. So why not have an affair? Many in our society believe monogamy is outdated and imposed unnaturally by the state. I found this online comment as someone reflected on Ashley Madison's service. They wrote, it's on a couple of pages, but they wrote here, "I'm not surprised at Ashley Madison's appeal, given that most people persist in marrying and yet seem ill-suited to the long-term cohabitation, commingling of finances and sexual exclusivity that such a state-defined and enforced relationship requires. I have no idea why people marry in the first place. Marriage is not something on my to-do-before-I-die list, and never has been. Poor, deluded fools. Who would subject themselves, let alone a friend and a lover, to the contract language of marriage? Most people are ill-suited to long-term cohabitation and sexual exclusivity. Marriage is for poor, deluded fools. Why not have an affair indeed?" So who is there to argue with the wisdom of Ashley Madison and modern science? Well, maybe the author of the Book of Proverbs. The Book of Proverbs is a collection of wise sayings attributed to King Solomon. The book is grouped with other books in a section of the Bible we call wisdom literature. And wisdom literature is a collection of practical and philosophical observations of the world. The Book of Proverbs in particular gives advice for wise living. Now, it's not just a series of random sayings, they're wise sayings which how to live the good life, the best life. Proverbs doesn't necessarily teach knowledge. It explains how to be wise. And the two are very different. The difference is clearly described by the great 19th century preacher Charles Spurgeon, who says this: "Wisdom is the right use of knowledge. To know is not to be wise. Many men know a great deal, and they are all the greater fools for it. There is no fool so great a fool as a knowing fool. But to know how to use knowledge is to have wisdom." Now, Spurgeon was not against accumulating knowledge. In fact, Spurgeon himself had an encyclopedic mind. But he shows that wisdom is the right use of knowledge. Wisdom is right living, good living, the best living. And the author of Proverbs also believes that reverence for God is an important part of this good life. The author begins the book by claiming that wisdom begins with the fear of the Lord. This is an important observation, and it frames the reflections of the whole book of Proverbs and the wisdom that it offers. But we'll come back to that later. In the meantime, there are many jewels of wisdom in the book of Proverbs, including the part that we're looking at today in chapter 7. Proverbs chapter 7 occurs as part of a series of warnings a father gives to his son. The father is imparting wisdom to his son, exhorting him to live this good life. And see how he begins this particular pearl. Look at sentences 1 and 2 in your outlines there. It says, "My son, keep my words and store up my commandments within you. Keep my commandments and you will live. Guard my teachings as the apple of your eye." So the father's telling the son, live like this and you'll be wise. Live like this and you'll live a life that is happy, fulfilling and enriched. Follow this way of life and you will truly live. And what is the way to wisdom? What should he bind on his fingers and write on his heart? He says, be wise and avoid the adulterous woman at all costs. He implores his son to be wise. He says there in sentence 4, be as close to wisdom as family. Be wise. And then in the next sentence, if you are wise, you'll avoid the adulterous woman. Wisdom and insight will keep you away from the wayward woman, the quintessential mistress and her seductive words. Wisdom will save you from disaster. And he then goes and gives a story, which Christine read it for us before, that of a man who's arranged a meeting. Say he's arranged a meeting through the Ashley Madison website. The imagery is vivid, isn't it? You can almost see the older man reflectively penning the words as he looks out the window and sees this young man nervously walking down the street to meet someone he's met on Ashley Madison. This young man is arranged to meet the woman, and she seduces him. Now, it's not clear here in chapter 7 if the man's married or not, but I think he probably is. The broader context makes this clearer. If we think back a couple of chapters to chapter 5 of Proverbs, the father encourages his son to drink water from your own cistern. The son should rejoice in the wife of his youth, and he should not be intoxicated with another man's wife. And here in chapter 7, we see a vivid story of a man intoxicated with another man's wife. This is an affair with a sexually aggressive, quintessential mistress. Many of these type of women use and relish the pleasures of websites like Ashley Madison. One of these women confessed, and she wrote on the Ashley Madison website, or someone talking about the Ashley Madison website, she said this: "A few weeks ago, I had a fantastic meeting with someone who's been married for 15 years and has 3 children. I met him at the Four Seasons on Friday night, and we met up again on Saturday morning, and we went to Vegas for 2 days. I didn't really care that the guy's married. He has no desire to leave his family, and I have no desire for a commitment. So it's ideal." Or I found this on another website. It said, "Some women want to have sex with married men precisely because they're married. It's exciting. It's illicit. They'll never have to look at the guy's razor stubble first thing every morning. They'll never have to get him to mow the lawn. For them, he makes sure he's at his best. He's at his most alluring." A number of years ago, I knew someone who had an encounter with this adulterous woman. He was a young, keen Christian guy in his mid-20s. He was at a work function at the races and with a number of colleagues, celebrating some work success that they had. He said that they were enjoying a lovely lunch overlooking the race course, and then she came in and sat next to him. She was an attractive, easygoing, blonde woman. They chatted politely and pleasantly, and then as time went on and as she had more to drink, she came on stronger and stronger. She was in a long-term relationship with another guy, but she whispered seductive words to this man. She played with his hair, gave him flirtatious cuddles, and flattered him with smooth talk. Nothing else happened, but the whole experience was extremely unsettling and unnerving. It was unsettling because of the power of her seduction. It was so easy to be seduced. How do I know that? Well, because I was that young man. I remember the occasion very clearly. I wanted more. I liked the attention. I enjoyed her smooth talk, her touch and her flirting. I wasn't even married, and yet I walked away feeling as though I had an encounter with this adulterous woman described here in Proverbs. I also felt glad that I was walking home and I hadn't been seduced. Now, importantly, this passage isn't saying that all women are like this, adulterous and seductive. It's not saying that affairs are always the women's fault. In Proverbs 7 here, the focus is on the man. The man is described in the story lacked judgment. He lacks self-control and he lacks wisdom. He failed to heed the warnings. He failed to be wise and he failed to avoid the adulterous woman. But this is hard. It's hard because the passion, the desire and the sex are all so good. Look at how the woman in Proverbs describes how she has prepared for her affair. Look here in verses of sentences 15 and following. She says, "So I came out to meet you. I looked for you and I have found you. I have covered my bed with coloured linens from Egypt. I have perfumed my bed with myrrh, aloes and cinnamon. Come, let's drink deeply of love till morning. Let's enjoy ourselves with love." Wow, what man could possibly resist this intoxicating picture of passion and seduction? What man could possibly resist the woman who wants and desires him for a long evening of passionate sex? What man could resist this? The man who is wise. The man who has kept wisdom close to his heart and has guarded the teachings of his wise teacher. The man who wants to live. But unfortunately, our character, the man described here in Proverbs, is not wise. He's seduced. And the author of Proverbs describes what happens to him as he's led astray. From sentence 22, it says, "All at once he followed her like an ox going to the slaughter, like a deer stepping into a noose till an arrow pierces his liver, like a bird darting into a snare, little knowing it will cost him his life." This affair, this evening of passion and pleasure, will cost him his life. Affairs ultimately lead to destruction. I think the expression "costing his life" here has a double meaning. The first meaning, I think, is it's going to cost him his immediate good life, which this is the life that Proverbs promises if one's obedient to the teacher. Your life will never be the same again after an affair. Life will fall apart. Life will be miserable and painful. Tiger Woods was one of the greatest golfers of all time, world number one for over a decade. Yet after it was revealed he'd been with many mistresses, he lost not only his wife, but millions of dollars and his number one golf ranking. Does anyone know where Tiger Woods is ranked in the world at the moment? This time last year he was still number one. Number nine. He's slipped. It's a number nine, and he's never been the same golfer since, and he's on his way down. And closer to home, there's Wayne Carey. Wayne Carey was one of the finest AFL players to have played. Yet he was forced to leave the Kangaroos after it emerged he'd been having an affair with the wife of teammate Anthony Stevens. He published a biography recently where he writes candidly about his affair. And he writes this, I'll read it out on what he's on his departure from the Kangaroos. He says, "On Wednesday, March the 13th, 2002, I left the Kangaroos. It seemed the only reasonable thing to do, but I've never coped with that loss. For a long time, my state of mind was shot. I destroyed my relationship with my wife. I lost my career, most of my friends, and my dignity. I also lost my family at North Melbourne, which had become the family I never had as a child. That's a lot to lose in one day, and it's taken me the best part of 8 years to come to terms with it." In early 2002, Wayne Carey lost his life. He had an affair and he lost everything. Like an ox going to the slaughter, like a deer stepping into a noose like a bird darting into a snare. Wayne Carey lost his life. But in this section of Proverbs, there's a second meaning of costing his life. There's a sense in which these deeds will be judged because God is watching. Earlier in Proverbs 5:21, it says, "For your ways are in full view of the Lord, and he examines all your paths." Remember, I said earlier that the beginning of wisdom is the fear of the Lord. The Lord watches, and the Lord will judge. Adultery is not consistent with God's plan for marriage or for sex. As we saw last week, sex creates and reinforces a bond between a man and a woman in marriage. Affairs rupture this bond, and so the victims of the adulterous woman are confined to the chambers of death. We don't like the concept of judgment in our society, and we don't like the concept of God being a judge. But this is what Proverbs is saying. The adulterer will be judged by God. This may seem a pretty scary prospect, particularly if we've ever engaged in any extramarital affair, but the joy of the Christian message is that there is forgiveness and there is hope. This hope comes through the person and work of Jesus Christ, but we'll say more about that next week. So, what should the wise person do? Should the wise person engage in an affair? The message from the book of Proverbs is clear and emphatic. No. The wise man will avoid affairs at all costs. Affairs lead to destruction and ultimately to the judgment of God. Ashley Madison's tagline is, "Life is short, have an affair." But the message from Proverbs is, "Have an affair, shorten your life." Affairs are seductive. The sexual arousal and excitement is exciting. Even in that brief encounter at the races, I felt seduced by the power and pull of an affair. But the message of Proverbs is, if you want to live the good life, if you want to avoid destruction, avoid the affair.